Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This podcast is also a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And our final sponsor is brought to you by Reclaiming the Classroom. Effective learning happens because of a relationship built between a teacher and a student, not due to government mandates and high-stakes testing. You can learn more at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. I created Better Leaders, Better Schools because I was fed up of not having deep conversations, vulnerable, authentic conversations about school leadership. And that's why you keep coming back week after week. You listen to this podcast as an investment in your own leadership development. If you would like to invest in the production of Better Leaders, Better Schools, I have really good news. It's extremely affordable. $1 or $2 a month will go very far and make a big impact. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. To become a patron, it's easy. Just click the link in the show notes, become a patron. Thank you for investing in yourself and thank you for investing in this podcast. Thank you for listening every week. Let's get this show started.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Today's guest on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast is Ryan Bruick. You're really going to enjoy this show. He has a great heart for teaching. In fact, he emailed me. I love teaching. I love coaching. I love science. And I think that love will come through in this podcast. He's been teaching for 12 years. He started off in Wheaton Warrenville, which is a suburb of Chicago, and is now in Noblesville High School in Indiana. With Don Wetrick, who is also on our podcast. One of the reasons I asked Ryan to be on the show is because he is experimenting with standards-based grading, and I thought it'd be interesting to bring his insights, what he's learned over the few years that he's been implementing it. Everybody says it's a great idea. There's not a lot of practical advice on how to do it, and so I hope you find some of that in this conversation. Thanks for tuning in. That always means a lot to me, and enjoy the show. So, Ryan, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
I don't know that it's so much that I was inspired to pursue a career in education. I kind of fell into it. I went to school to study chemistry. I thought I wanted to be a dentist. Shadowed a dentist midway through my freshman year and saw some stuff I couldn't unsee. So decided that might not be the route for me to go. Continued to love my pursuit of science, considered music, psychology, different things. And through it all, I had this recurring theme of I enjoyed helping people understand the content, whatever it was. My classmates, my peers, and even family members and friends and roommates. You know, I found myself teaching roommates stuff that they probably didn't even really care to learn about. But I think I had a knack for it and I enjoyed it. And so when all was said and done, I went and got my degree in secondary education and science and did my student teaching and went from there. My student teaching was so bad, not because of the supervising teacher or the kids or anything, but because of me. I was not very good. In fact, my supervising teacher told me at one point very bluntly, "Bruick, you suck at this. And you have two options. You quit and get out, or you get better. Which do you want to do?" And, you know, 21, 22-year-old me was like, "Well, I can't waste this money. I just got to get better. I don't know. The easy way out is just quit." But, and then he challenged me and coached me. And I was fortunate enough to get a job in the west suburbs of Illinois.
You know, I was pretty sure that you're going to say that your supervising teacher said either you should quit or become a dentist, but that didn't happen. So, hey, Ryan, let's pause there real quick, because honestly, if I had been told that as a student teacher, my experience was pretty good, and I always felt like I was made to teach, and I've had a good career, and for me, honestly, it's come very naturally. I've always worked hard at improving every single year, but nobody ever told me like I shouldn't do it. And that's got to like just hit you in the face, you know? So how did you rebound from that type of very honest feedback? And was there some type of tip or trick that helped you shift your mindset? Like, I don't know if I would have rebounded myself if I had received that feedback. So how did you deal with that?
The criticism, the feedback that my supervising teacher provided me was a lot more in depth than that. After he said, you know, you're no good at this, figure it out. He was able to provide me things that he felt I was good at. And that was, I understood the content. I understood the purpose. I understood the reason behind the instruction. But what I didn't have at the time is any sense of classroom management or any confidence in front of a group of kids. So, you know, my current students laugh at me when I say this, but the first few weeks of school, I'm carrying a stack of 50 note cards to the front of the classroom with like scripted jokes and even like laugh here. And like, I was so uncomfortable in front of a group of kids, and I was in an AP class, and here I'm 22 and they're like 18. I'm borderline concerned that they, because they're immersed in it, they know the content better than me. I'm going to make mistakes. It's very high ability kids with, who hold your feet to the fire. And, they were great kids. It just, I had no idea how to get what I wanted to across to them. And I to this day maintain, you learn how to teach by teaching. I wish I was naturally gifted at it from the start. I think I am now, but it took a lot of work to get there. So,
and so how'd you rebound though from that feedback? Like, what is it inside you, Ryan, that didn't allow you to quit? Was it just the fear of all the investment of money and time?
No, it's more than that. It was, you know, I've had success in my life prior to that. It was the first time that I ever failed at anything I wanted to do. And that was a really hard lesson. But at the same time, I had failed at plenty of other things that maybe I didn't want to do, and persevered and understood that there's nothing outside the realm of possibility of what I can or can't do. Do I really want to do this? And the answer when I asked that was resoundingly, absolutely, this is what I want to do. So, you know, as Russ, my supervising teacher, said, either quit or get better. And if you want to get better, I'll help you. And I trusted him.
You know, what I love about what you're sharing there, I was listening to a podcast actually yesterday in the car. It was this entrepreneur. He was Scottish too, so it was really wonderful to listen to his accent. But he actually grew up with some type of condition in his ear, and it had not been diagnosed. So he was learning how to read lips. He was learning how to make adjustments just so he could be successful in the classroom. But having that disability in his ear and not being able to hear very well, he had a hard time in school. The reason I'm sharing this is because for a long, long time, he internalized that he was no good, that he wasn't any smart. And it took some years of reprogramming to shift his mindset. The connection between him and you, though, is both of you had a wealth of experiences to look back on where you had struggled and persevered, where you had been successful. And I think that's what I want my listeners to pull out of what you just shared there. Reflect back on those moments of you doing really well, of you succeeding, of you growing, and really focus on that when you're facing a tough time so that you can persevere.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, it's not an easy way to learn, but in many cases, it's necessary.
Right, right. So Ryan, how would you describe your leadership style and how did you develop it?
I think two things, and this is where I'll say I believe I was more naturally talented, or I had already at this point in my career cultivated the skills to be a leader, and it comes through things like, oh gosh, being the section leader of the clarinet section in marching band for a couple years.
Yes. And
things where you get these responsibilities as a kid that translate into skills that you can use as an adult. That sounds so simple, but so I tend to lead by example. I'm in a unique position of being both a classroom instructor and an instructional coach. And so when I'm coaching a teacher, I have the opportunity to say, look, this is what I've tried. This is what I have done. These are the things I would try or would do. And I can do a lot of almost professional development by example. The other thing, and this is probably the biggest thing, is I try to lead with a certain degree of humility. I would never pretend that my answer is the answer, that my method is the method. I think it would shock some people earlier in my life to hear me say that, because I wasn't always that way. It's through experience and through very, very just amazing coworkers who challenge my thinking all the time to let me realize, like, look, you may have a solution, but listen to the people you're coaching and find out, is it the one that works best for them?
Do you have a specific example of one of those experiences where your coworkers may have challenged you, or you know, I really like that you shared, you might not have always had that gift of humility, but you see that as essential as a leader now. So do you have a specific example of where you learned that your answer wasn't always the right answer to develop that humility skill?
Oh, I think it happened. I was kind of shaped over time by different interactions with professionals, but I can think of one recently. We were developing, so I developed a method of reporting standards-based grading for my chemistry class, and I had some world language teachers in my building who were very much interested in the idea. They saw it as an effective tool for improving the learning in their classroom, but they kept saying to me, like, you know, Bruick, your report, your method of reporting, it doesn't work for us because you're science and we're humanities and they're so different. And I'm so locked into this notion that everyone has the same grade book. You know, we have a system, a student information system, and that's what we use. And I use the same one the art teacher uses, the same one the world language, the PE teacher. And so I couldn't hear her saying, we need something different. We need something totally different. And it wasn't until they showed me what they wanted. Right. And I looked at it, and I'm like, I would not in a million years have come up with this for two reasons. I don't think the way they do. That's not good or bad. It's just we think different. We approach problems from a different position and different experience. And the other thing is, I am not an expert in world language content or teaching. Like, that's so far out of my realm of expertise that when they showed me that, I'm like, basically, thank you. It just makes so much sense. So that was last year. That was this summer. That was in July, you know. And so that's just one more instance of it.
How'd you get to that moment when they showed you exactly what they wanted? And then did you collaborate with them to help build the way to report that out? Or are they using it now?
Yeah. They, oh gosh, it's so good. I could do a podcast on their reporting system and five people would listen and enjoy it.
No, but, we're all enjoying this one. Yeah.
So they did a great job. They basically came up with their standards, what they wanted their students to know. They based it on something that already existed that was vetted. And then they developed a rubric that spanned the student's ability to engage in a world language in different facets from year one to AP. And they have this continuum that they're moving their kids up. And so the reporting part of it is, I've worked with our math PLC to develop some different reporting things using Google Sheets. And they're working with World Language now on updating their progress report and what it looks like. We just surveyed all of the students who are engaged in a classroom that's practicing standards-based grading, which is a small cohort within our school, a big school. And we're going to use those results to shape where we go from here. But world language looks very different than chemistry, looks different than algebra, and looks different than U.S. world history, and photojournalism. They're all very different. And so, you know, we are working toward a more encompassing grade system for students and parents to look at and say, okay, this looks similar, but I understand how it's different, but it does need to be different. I think now that these world language teachers have opened my eyes to the idea, like, hey, our content's different. Why is our reporting the same? Mm-hmm. So it's different.
What would you say to school leaders that want to, show the reports in the same way, right? Like, it sounds like you believe it's not a one size fit all, and it's very much contingent on the content and the experts in the classroom. But I know I don't know if it's for the ease of use or the uniformity, the streamlinedness, if that's even a word. But what would you say to those school leaders that want to report it all the same way?
First of all, if I understand what it means, it's a word. So that's a word. Streamlinedness.
Yes.
I don't have that pressure from my administrators, so I haven't really had to deal with it. Where the pressure comes from is the students and the parents who are trying to interpret the reports. And they are the, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to remove the parents from this. The students are the end stakeholders in the learning process. I do appreciate parent advice and guidance when it comes to, you know, how do I read this report, or what can I do to help improve my students' understanding? How can I use this tool? But for the students, anything we can do to remove confusion or garbling of data and streamline it so that grades equal understanding and that's it, then we need to do it. And I'm not quite convinced yet that we can't find a way to have a almost all-encompassing type of report. It's going to look different than anything that I've seen or come up with yet. But our elementary schools are actually doing a really good job of it and have been for the past few years. I shared some resources with you that has examples of actually one of my assistant principal's kids' standards-based report card from the grade school level.
Hey, it seems like everyone calls you Bruick instead of Ryan, so I think I'm going to switch that halfway through. So,
I think it's because of my kids. I think that's like, that's cool.
You're an instructional coach as well. How would the staff that you work with describe you?
Supportive, helpful. Some of them would probably describe me as challenging to them professionally. I hope all of those in a positive regard. I don't know. I love building relationships with teachers as much as I do students. I have a goal, and it is improve learning. And I think a lot of teachers have the same goal as me. Sometimes we do need reminded of the fact that that is our goal. But ultimately, when we come back to that, we realize that we have a shared a mission and vision. And I think they can trust me, and I don't know. Besides trust, respect, and a strong relationship, I don't know what more they would describe me as beyond that. I guess that's a tough one.
It is.
I should probably ask.
Be interesting to see what they'd say for sure.
Yeah.
So what would you say to a novice instructional coach stepping into their first day on the job? And I think you pulled apart like a lot of the keys of being successful as an instructional coach. You talked about relationships, trust, respect. How do you develop that stuff?
You have to talk with teachers. It's not enough just to send a quick email and say, hey, guys, I'm here. If you need any help, it's me. Granted, the first 2 years of my coaching, that was about all I could do because while I was designated an instructional coach in the school, we were district-wide for external pressures, unable to free me up for any blocks at all in my day. So it was like, hey, here's somebody who's been trained as an instructional coach, and you can go to them. Oh, but there's no time. And so it took 2 more years to get the time. And it was just circumstances. That's how it goes. And it was communicated clearly to me what those circumstances were and what my expectations were. And I appreciated that, and we were good. But now it's a matter of just kind of cruising the hallways and popping in and saying hi to teachers, making sure that that they're always in a position of understanding that I have one job, and that's to build capacity for student success and learning. And that is done through this, through the teachers. I have no evaluative role whatsoever. I don't want an evaluative role ever. I would lose trust, and I need teachers to be able to come to me with problems, frustrations. Sometimes I feel like I'm a grief counselor. And honestly, they're some of my best days, because I can talk with a teacher about frustrations to the point where they can go home and enjoy their evening and decompress and relax and come back to it fresh the next day. And sometimes we get so wrapped up in the moment that we make bad decisions. And I love it that my teachers can call me and say, hey, this just happened. What do you think? And then we talk through it. And those are great days. They're taxing, but I love them.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what I really like about what you share there, it's just like working with teachers, same as students, there's so much going on underneath the surface that you may or may not be aware of. And to know and to hear you, Brooke, say that some of your best days are when you're actually operating as a grief counselor, because you take the time to get in and do that type of dirty work, that hard work, the days you do need to challenge and help people step their game up in the classroom to do what's best for kids, they're willing to do it because you spent that time with them earlier. So bravo to you from Better Leaders, Better Schools for doing that.
Thank you.
Now, we've said some nice things about you. We heard some great anecdotes of you being successful. What would you say has been your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Gosh, this was the hardest one when I looked at it, and it's going to sound, it could be interpreted inappropriately, that I don't know. That's not to say that I haven't made a lot of mistakes. I just don't know what my biggest one is.
Well, feel free to pick one that wasn't so big then, and what did you learn from that mistake?
Oh, I think this is a recurring theme. I think it's the overpromise, underdeliver problem. I have a great, I have a ton of great coworkers, but one in particular has the reverse mantra, you know, underpromise, overdeliver. And it's not that I don't subscribe to that. It's that I have a hard time doing it. I want to say yes to everyone, and I do. And then sometimes I think I let people down, and that's hard. It doesn't sit well with me. So better understanding of what I am and am not temporally capable of. I need to improve on that for sure.
So we got a lot of great classes out there in our nation's schools, but I want to push you here and to tell me, what's one class we should currently offer that, best to your knowledge, isn't offered anywhere in our nation? What would that class be?
I like this one. I think the class that I wish I would have had in high school or before, or really starting in elementary school, is a class that's called spreadsheets. Like, no, there doesn't need to be a class called spreadsheets, but come on. I don't know too many people who couldn't benefit from leveraging the power to work within a spreadsheet, whether that's low-end use for personal finance tracking, or if it's for high-end use like scripting and programming. You know, and here I say this, and it's like, well, ask any of my students how many times I've asked them to work in a spreadsheet, and the answer right now is zero within this year's group. But case in point, this is, you know, earlier before we started recording, you know, I talked about earlier the survey that we did with our students for standards-based grading, and I had a number of students, it wasn't very many, it was like four, but that's enough, who say, I didn't really feel challenged to the best of my ability. And I'm like, okay, well, through the avenue of preparing for this podcast and doing some of the reflection that it took to get there and compiling that with the survey results, I'm like, why don't I just create a new task for those that feel challenged? And so I did. It's called Create a Program That Does Stoichiometry. And so if I have any kids listening and you're one of those four or five kids that said, I don't feel challenged, there you go. If you don't know what stoichiometry is right now, that's a good starting place. So it's a great teaching affords me so much creativity in areas where I wouldn't otherwise get it. And I love that.
The funny thing is that you mentioned the spreadsheet class. I probably could have benefited from that. You know, currently this is 2015. It's going to be 2016 soon. And I'm working for Chicago Public Schools. A lot of great things about it. A lot of challenges too. And one of the challenges would be, you know, we have like five different student information systems that seemingly have different information on the same kids and they don't talk to each other. And through the work of some really amazing people, Jeff over at Northside College Prep, Barton at Chavez Elementary, and actually my wife, Dr. Bauer at Peyton, they've been able to leverage the power of Excel sheets, pull this information that doesn't talk to each other and is sometimes different, and they've created what we call and what we should have, in my opinion, as a school leader, the dashboard. And it's this Excel spreadsheet with like 20, 30 tabs, but it has everything you need as a school leader, from kid's name, email, gender, homeroom, all their classes, all their grades, attendance, tardies, how much money they may owe to the school, distance they live from the school, athlete or not, do they receive, you know, 504 or any accommodations. All this great stuff in the name of RTI, right? So when students are struggling, how do we help them and what's going on in their lives? To get that dashboard off the ground took hundreds of hours easily, right? And I had to watch so many YouTube videos just to figure it out. Then, you know, not even including what Jeff and, you know, they really taught it to me. So it you know, made the process so much easier. But gosh, like, Excel, yes, and spreadsheets, Google spreadsheets, we need to know how to use them. They can be so, so powerful.
Amen.
How do you want to be remembered as a school leader, Brooke?
I guess no matter where or how I'm working, I want to be remembered as somebody that had a positive impact on student learning and teacher learning, and learning in general. I don't really need anything else. That'd be enough.
Well, I'm pretty sure from our short conversation, I know you're having that impact. And again, you came highly recommended. So just keep up the good work. That's for sure.
Thank you.
You know, I've looked over your blog, and we're trying to implement standards-based grading at my school. We're all on the same page in terms of wanting to report out only what students are able to master and understand. But our current implementation is, it's a mess. Teachers are very, very frustrated. They're stressed, often can even get, you know, quite upset about it. The kids, the parents have a hard time understanding as well. So we definitely haven't figured it out. One of the big problems that we're seeing too is, you know, we're not counting what used to be called homework. We're now calling it practice work. We use that analogy, right? Like, so the Chicago Bulls, they're a decent basketball team. But back in the day, right, when Jordan and all them were winning the NBA championships, they didn't get graded or they didn't get reports in the newspaper about their practice. But it was important because if they didn't put that in, what did get reported, the wins and losses, right, and what they get measured by, they wouldn't have been as successful as they had been. However, that's not translating to our kids, and we're seeing them not – do practice work. Yeah. I read through the survey that you sent me, and it seems like maybe some of your kids struggle with that, but it didn't seem like a lot do. So
I
really, at this point, I'd love to just learn from you and share this you know, with the audience. Like, how are you currently implementing standards-based grading? What's working? Why is it working? You know, what kind of systems do you have set up?
So first, there are about 150 teachers in my high school. And last year, one of us tried it, and it was me. And this year, eight of us are trying it. We have three algebra teachers in a a PLC of 4 or 5. So not every algebra teacher is doing the same grading. That's can and maybe should be a little bit scary for an administrator to hear. So same in chemistry. We have all of the honors chemistry, which is what I teach, and that look in the interest of transparency there. Those are the kids I teach. And in truth, the difference in the survey results between what you see from me and what you might get at your school could, I think, be largely attributed to the type of student that I have. So we need to investigate that. That's why all of our teachers gave this survey across all levels. I think 3 or 4 out of 5 Spanish teachers are doing it. So number one is communication. You have to communicate. We're finding that some teachers are better at communicating than others, and I have no interest in spending any time on the frustration of teachers that aren't as good at communicating. It's just about, okay, what can we do better? You know, like, that we're going to make mistakes. We have to make mistakes to get better. And so if one teacher, maybe their students report back that they didn't necessarily understand the system, because that was one of the questions, do you understand? How well could you explain it to somebody else? Then we need to go to the teachers whose students reported higher and figure out what was different. That's the only interest I have in this survey. We're not out to compare teacher. Heck, it wasn't my idea. It was the other teacher's idea.
Okay.
But big time parent communication, we can all do a better job of that. Effective communication to students. My coworker, Christy Steffen, who challenges me on a daily basis, has said for 2 years, you know, part of the reason why you're successful is because of the way you deliver the system and the passion and belief that you have in it for improving learning and learning effectiveness. And while I believe all of the teachers who signed on, I know all of the teachers who signed on to try this year have the same vision and beliefs as me, I don't know if they all articulate it as emphatically as I do. It's not that they believe any less in it. It's just maybe they don't realize the power of getting excited about it with your kids. Like, look, we have an opportunity here to really focus in on the learning and what to do. I need to probably talk about the homework aspect. In truth, if you read through those, there's an undercurrent of kids who would appreciate some credit given for homework so they're more motivated to do it. I'm not prepared to do that for them. I am prepared to have conversations with them like you do about, you know, the Bulls of the 90s, and, you know, ask, you know, keep going, ask Steph Curry, ask Paul George if he was rewarded for sitting on a chair with a broken leg and shooting, you know, 150 shots from a chair. Was he rewarded for that?
Right.
Kinda. Your player of the month last month, you know, but it didn't come out in a practice grade. It came out in the end result. And, you know, you touched on the shift from homework to practice. I appreciate that so much. In fact, institutionally, that's interesting. The problem is you're just actually believe it and make it real. So I could change my verbiage from, hey guys, do this homework, to, hey guys, I need you to prepare for class. But if the work that I'm sending home for them, if they don't see it as preparation for the next time, if I'm not holding them accountable the next day, the second they walk in the room, for the fact that if you didn't prepare, you are at a disadvantage right now, and that's not acceptable, then it's not really preparation. Mm-hmm. It's just homework. So you can't just walk, or you can't just talk the talk. You can't do that. Student perception is probably one of the more powerful indicators of how well they're going to learn. So if they're invested, if they believe that you believe in the content, if they believe that you are really preparing them for something, they're going to buy in. If they believe that your goal is to help them, more of them will buy in than not.
And with your current implementation of standards-based grading, is that like a 100% summative score?
Yeah. I mean, the thing with standards-based grading is, and, you know, like anything, you get, I think the three letters SBG probably caused some teachers to break out in hives. you know.
I've seen it. So, it's terrible.
I have too. I have too. That's all right. For the last few years, I think the three letters UBD have done that for me.
Oh!
So I'm getting better at it though, because I believe in it, and it's just it was hard for me to get my head around, and I'm doing better now, but which is good because it's my job. I gave 15 assessments this semester. Those are the 15 data points that I collected. They don't, most of them encompass two or three learning goals. But my assessments have varied. They've gone from multiple choice to now I give a kid a piece of wax and say, prove to me with math, graphs, words, and drawings, whether or not this wax will sink or float in alcohol and water. And then I give them the densities of alcohol and water. Okay. So then I slap that learning goal at the top and give them 90 minutes and cross my fingers is what I did this year. And oh my gosh, they blew me away.
Awesome.
They actually, my original system had, really just three categories, either no evidence of improvement, you haven't yet mastered it, or you have mastered it. And from that one assessment, which is unlike any assessment I've ever given, they gave me cause to add a category called exemplary, which is your evidence of understanding is so good, it provides an example to other learners.
I like that definition of exemplary too. That's cool.
Thanks. As a, I think Melissa kicked my counterpart in chemistry, came up with that.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause she actually looked at the kid's example and goes, man, that's exemplary. I'm like, oh, that's the word we needed.
Yeah.
So it was great. So thanks to her.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by the book Reclaiming the Classroom by Trenton Goebel. Are you like me? Are you just sick of testing? Do you have that type of fatigue? Well, I have the solution for you. Reclaiming the Classroom, the book by Trenton Goebel, is an in-depth exploration of a political climate that favors high-stakes testing and government mandates over the skillful art of teaching, and provides teachers a road back to professionalism, autonomy, and respect. Doesn't that sound nice? Well, it does, and you should get it today at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day. And that's why I created a free gift for you called the 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You could grab it for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW, all one word, UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and it will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show. That's pretty cool. So I'm looking at your blog, and I'm looking at a screenshot you have of one of the learning goals, goal number one in the blog. I can explain and represent changes in mass during both physical and chemical changes. And this student has basically four assessments, and they moved from a level two for you, which is a not yet performance, to by assessment three, they earned a mastery, a level three code. And the overall performance, therefore, is a mastery. When you're given these assessments, are there any types of like retakes or redos with assessments, or is it just the next time they assess? So from August 14th to August 20th to August 28th, are those just their opportunity? How do you work with that?
Yeah. So did you like how I avoided your question about just summative assessments?
Well, yeah. So I'm trying to dig in because we've got some issues we're working through.
Here's why.
Yeah.
They're formative until they become they're summative until they become formative.
Yeah.
Like if it can be a summative assessment, if I can put a capstone on it and say, dang, dude, there is no way you don't understand this, I'm done. I think some parents would, freak out a little bit by that because it's like, well, basically you're just judging whether or not my student gets it or not. I'm like, yeah, that's what I've been doing my entire career. It just feels a little bit different. Now I'm not hanging it on these manufactured multiple choice questions and that. So to answer your question better, the 15 assessments that I do are the 15 that every single student takes. What you don't see in there, and this is the hard part to report to students and especially to parents, because the students, it's their experience. But are all the reassessments, the kid coming up with assessment number two and saying, hey, God, I knew what, by the time I got home what I did wrong here. Can I take a look at that assessment and go through and discuss it with you? And if my understanding improves, will you change that score? And so I struggle with, you know, some people would be like, yeah, I'll change that score. The learning improved. I'm more of a so tied to evidence that I want to keep that point of they didn't understand it and then show the next one. And the thing is, our reporting tools are so locked down that I don't really have the capacity to do that except for with comments. And then the kids don't read the comments or they're not sure where to look. And so you got a lot of coaching that goes on there too. So part of it is building the student's capacity on how to navigate the fact that if they don't get it right the first time, it's okay. But you better start working toward it. I'm going to give you a lot of guidance. What I haven't seen yet is this sort of slippery slope, scary idea that all kids just decide they're not going to do the assessment the first time because they don't really care, because they can reassess whenever they want. And then you have this stockpile of reassessments and nobody learns anything till the week before finals. You know, this is the mentality that I think scares a lot of people away from it. And so far, my theory that students don't really like taking tests again and again and again is true. And so they're more interested in just like, okay, Mr. Brewick, I don't understand this. Can I come in for help in academic lab? Yes. If I understand it, can I reassess? Yes. And if you're really good at your content, you can reassess kids on the fly.
So what does that reassessment look like? Is that a new assessment that you wrote? Is that a conversation? So how does that look? Because we do retakes at our school. We design new assessments. So it adds to the workload of a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
So we're honestly just trying to figure that out.
Well, you hit on something that's way bigger here. Standards-based grading. If you're going to do standards-based grading without providing your teachers more time to do it, and they're not the instigators, that may be an uphill battle.
Right.
It's a lot more time. Look, I teach three sections of a high ability, or they've classified themselves as high ability students. And I don't have, like, I'm not married. I don't have kids. Like, this is what I do. It's why I'm successful at it, is because I do have the time. So if we're not providing teachers the time, like I said, that's an uphill battle. No. To answer your question, what the retakes or reassessments look like, the answer is yes to all of those. Sometimes it is a conversation. Sometimes we have whiteboards in my room on the desks. Sometimes it's like, hey, make up a problem and solve it yourself that exemplifies that you do understand it, but don't make it an easy one. You know, you've demonstrated that you don't understand this a couple times now. I really want to see some high level. So the kid has to understand what high level is and then execute it. And if they can't, we work with them. It's always about the learning and the growth, but that takes time too. And you have to have a forum in which you can do that. So we do. We have every other day, we have 90 minutes dedicated to improving whatever you need to in whatever classes you need to. And we have a culture where the expectation is students will take advantage of that. Sometimes it's a lab. I can send a kid to a lab and say, go measure some stuff and prove to me you understand how to measure, how to estimate precision, and how to round the resulting solutions to the problems that come out of it. Many times it's a retake. Like you said, we manufacture a new quiz with a few additional problems on it and we give it to them. And sometimes it can just be them correcting their mistakes. The thing is, you need to make sure it's authentic and they didn't just go in and be like, hey, what should I tell him when I go talk to him?
Right.
You gotta dig. You gotta look for those memorization cues and just regurgitation. It has to be authentic.
Mm-hmm. You said so many good things that I really appreciate. You don't even know. So thank you. Thank you for your insights there. I think so. To kind of give you a view of our school, like, listen, we probably have a school that would identify themselves as high capacity, high achieving students. We're the 16th best school in the state of Illinois, the 6th best school in Chicago, ACT average of over 23. you know, that our kids do very well, AP tests, all that type of stuff. And there's many kids thriving in the standards-based system. But there's also a portion that bother me because they're not seeing the connection. They're not doing the practice work. The slippery slope that you've described, I've seen where they purposely will – they'll literally tell a teacher when's the retake, right when they give the assessment.
Oh.
That same reaction you just had. Imagine,
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah, imagine the staff like bringing that up during leadership team meetings. And to be completely transparent with the listeners, the implementation wasn't wise, I don't think. You talked about making sure the teachers had time, and there seemed to be like even a voluntary aspect, like it's something we want to try out. What you didn't say, but you know, I think we can infer from your answers, is that as a school leader, you got to pilot things before going school wide.
Yeah.
To build that consensus, to see what those issues will be on a micro scale and try to tweak and adjust and fix before you go big and then have big problems. So, you know, I just want to be real with you, with the listeners. You know, to be quite honest, the jury's still out for me. I'm trying to figure this out. I want to be a believer. And I've seen the great things and I've also seen the bad. And I just don't have it figured out. So I'm very much just wanting to learn from you, from other experts, because I want to see it work. But right now there's just a lot of stress involved with it.
A woman by the name of Kathy Vatterott recently published a book called Rethinking Grading.
Okay.
And it outlines some different almost case studies in schools that implement standards-based grading the way that it sounds like you all have and the way that my school has. And it talks about potential pitfalls for both methods of implementation. So it's a great read because it does help guard you against some of the pitfalls. What I appreciate so much about my administration is that they permit us to take risks if we believe that they are going to benefit student learning. Now, 2 years ago, I went to my principal and said, I want to try doing standards-based grading. And he's like, okay, what's your plan? And I was like, I'm going to create some standards. And then I'm going to come up with a system that helps kids understand what they do and don't know. And then I guess figure out how to make the letter grade out of it. And he's like, nope, no, you can't. I'm like, wait, what? This principal has never said no to me, ever. I'm like, he thinks my ideas are good. And all of a sudden he's saying no. Well, thank goodness he did, because I wasn't ready. And he challenged me to get ready.
Wow.
And so I did, and I talked to other people, and I started thinking about what those learning goals were. And it is messy, but they're my learning goals that I wrote for my students. So I have ownership. It's not like somebody's making me do this. And the seven other teachers that are participating this year, my goodness, like, I warned them what they were signing up for. I said, you are going to have to change everything about how you assess.
Yeah.
And that affects how you teach. You're going to have questions come up that you didn't know exist, and you're going to have to deal with them on the fly, because if you don't, the learning is not going to be as good. And they're like, okay, we know, we got it. We really want to do this. And then, you know, we're like, 4 weeks into the first semester, and they're all like, oh my God, this is so much work. I didn't know, you know, and they're so I have such a tremendous amount of respect for those teachers who knowingly put themselves in a situation where they were creating a ton more work for themselves, but their hearts were in the right place. Their expertise was in the correct place. And they did it together. That's the big thing. I mean, it was eight teachers who were like, this is our thing. This is our passion. We're going to make it work. We're going to help. Our kids are going to help us make it work. We believe in it. And I think probably one or two of those teachers would agree with you and say that the jury's still out for them.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere along the line, they saw something that they thought would benefit their kids. There's no way they chose to do it because it was easier, because, oh, it's not.
Right.
And whichever way they decide to go, it's okay that for an administrator to say, yeah, you two chemistry teachers can do this, but you two don't have to. That is gutsy.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Listen, I got one more. I got two more questions with standards-based grading, and then we'll get into the closing. So, in terms of reporting, right, and in the blog you mentioned in the resources you sent me, you trained your kids to go to this link, this Google link that has how you report their understandings, and then from time to time you update the system, right? So. I guess I'm asking, like, how's that working out? You know, how did you train your kids to go there? What has been the response from the parents? Because it's new and it's different and it's way different than what they've ever experienced. So how's that going with reporting where the kid stands in your class?
Well, Daniel, what you see is what I tried to do. It didn't work. what I ended up doing was I went back to what I did last year. So I'll tell you what did work for me. Instead of doing that, and I can later send you a copy of my PDF, I just made a grid that has, it's the grid that you see.
Okay.
It has assessments across the top and learning goals down the side. And then where the two intersect, a learning goal that was assessed on that assessment, I provide them a mastery score on a quiz. Now, what they do is they have a PDF of this progress report. And we're one-to-one with iPads, so when I say they have a PDF, like, imagine it's paper. It's fine. You can do this with paper and pencil. So the kids have an assessment folder, and then they take their assessments, and they populate the spreadsheet. So I'm giving them the feedback, me, on the quiz, on the assessment, on the lab, whatever we did. Then they take that and apply it to their progress report, and they continually, every 4 to 6 weeks, I wish I was better at it, but it was more like every 6 to 8 weeks this year, we formally took time in class to sit down and go, where are you at right now? Where's your areas for growth? What can you kind of be confident in moving forward? And those are the times where we get a little bit of a spike in reassessments, because students do realize,
you're good.
I need to brush up on this. So I like that. It takes a lot of, you have to trust your students. Mm-hmm. You also probably have to vet them. So I have, in addition to, you know, when I look at their progress report, I have our learning management system, Canvas. If I put the data in there, it lets me compare the student's progress report to what I have entered in Canvas, and I can very quickly and colorfully see whether or not their data that they're reporting jives with what I actually gave them. So you do have to have some accountability there. So I really like that. Algebra is very different. They enter all of their own data in. They have a beautiful communication that has like screenshots of how to read and interpret their grade book. They're getting ready to launch version 2.0, which is so much more streamlined. Theirs is pretty simple. You get badges, and the number of badges you get determines the A or your letter grade. You know, 8 out of 8 of us wish we didn't have to report a letter grade, and 8 out of 8 of us understand that we do. So the probably the most artificial part of the whole thing is, like, how do you translate that? And it's interesting because it basically sets your level of rigor expectation as to where you draw that line. Like, for me, if 10 out of 10 is the only way to get an A, that's a rigorous course. If I had 25 learning goals per semester, and by the way, this is one way of reporting letter grades. I don't know how other people do it, because here's the other thing. When you start looking at how to do standards-based grading, like, how? Mm-hmm. Where is it?
Mm-hmm.
I can't find it.
Right.
I find a lot of really, really awesome research, and I'm starting to see a trickle of, here's how I do it. And I literally, our hope at Noblesville for two purposes: one, to help other teachers, but also selfishly to get feedback. We are literally just throwing everything we do out there and saying, hey, this is what we're doing. Take it. Here's why. Because people like a guy by the name of Kyle Pierce, who works with Alice Keeler, these people who are engaged in standards-based grading and have this huge capacity for Google Sheets, they've built these templates for us. And I've gone to conferences with Kyle, and Kyle's just like, here, man, this is the one I use in my class. Click here. It'll make a copy. And now you own it. Do whatever you want to it. So thanks to those people, we've actually been able to get up off the ground, and now we're kind of vetting our systems just to see where to grow.
So, Brooke, when does your book come out to teach us how to do it?
I don't know. Like, do they still offer sabbaticals?
Maybe. Depends on your school.
I don't think so. I think those days are kind of gone. I don't know. It used to be, man, when I started teaching, I used to get paid $2,000 to go to workshops for professional development, and I've not been teaching that long. And now I can't get money to go present at a conference.
Right. Wow.
It's crazy.
That is crazy. And an indictment, you know, on public education. Like, they should find that money to get people to invest in themselves so that they can grow and be a better educator. So that's too bad. The last standards-based question I had was, we get it, like multiple choice, I could section things off. You know, we have an awesome software called Mastery Connect, and I'm hoping that you know about that?
Good. Dude, I've done my research.
And that's an incredible software. It makes the multiple choice easy, right? But you talked about how you have multiple standards linked to an item on the assessment, and when it's maybe like a short answer, right, where they're explaining. Or that wax example you gave, and they have to draw and explain and graph and show a table. How do you pick apart the multiple standards then to report it for parents and students to say, here's where you're at?
So my learning management system, Canvas, offers as a feature option, they offer what they call a learning mastery gradebook. Canvas has changed the way that I'm able to teach. I do not work for Canvas. It's the best learning management system that I've ever used. The Learning Mastery Gradebook is so close. There is a bug in it right now that they're fully aware of, they're working on. It's just, this is a learning management system trying to do standards-based grading. Like, they're trying to figure it out, and they're so close. But right now, the kind of timestamp on the assignment doesn't necessarily hold every time, which is a big problem if you're more heavily weighting the most recent performance. And it gives you a way to do that. But the problem is, when that most recent performance toggles, by the time this podcast airs, fingers crossed, that's fixed.
It's fixed, everybody.
Yeah.
It's been fixed.
So that helps me quite a bit, but I get a sense that you're starting to touch on the idea of, like, almost like automated quiz grading. Would that be fair, like with multiple choice and stuff? Or,
well, yeah, Mastery Connect definitely does it, but I think most every question that I'm asking you is from experience, and the problems and obstacles my teachers, right, are facing, and so that they have a short response question, and they're assessing multiple standards in that question, and they're thinking, like, well, okay, learn in target one versus learn in target two, how do I pull that apart that this one's at mastery and this one's not?
Okay. So first, I believe you have to start, like, so last year when I was doing this, I tried a few times to slap my new learning goals on an old assessment.
Yeah.
And then I'm grading the old assessment, and I'm like, wait a second. Okay, this kid answered this question wrong, but there's nowhere to show that on the learning goals that I put at the top. So I put the learning goals at the top of the assessment now, and then I write questions framed around it. Sometimes I pull from old questions that were good, but I also went through old assessments, and I deleted a ton of questions that I felt no longer fit the learning goals, that they didn't exist. They didn't resolve to a fine enough degree whether or not the student actually understood it, or it was questions that they could answer correct and not know it, or that they could get wrong and know it. So that was very challenging. This year, I would say that of all of the questions that I gave, First of all, I didn't give a single multiple choice question this year. It's not a goal. It's just how it worked out. Last year, I did give multiple choice, but the key was if you want to make a multiple choice question, if you want to make a good one better, immediately follow it with explain your understanding or explain how you know. That is so simple to figure out, you know, on a multiple choice question. Well, I got C. Well, did you get C because it was one of four choices that were on the piece of paper and you didn't know which one and you landed correctly?
Yeah.
Or is it C because blah, 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 blah. So that was one way to make multiple choice more impactful. Same with true, false. You could do it. But I went almost exclusively toward open-end questions. And then I love grading with a highlighter. I basically, if you look at my learning goals, many of them have two or three or four things rolled up into one learning goal, which I can do for my honors level kids. I think if I were teaching the regular mainstream student, I would probably parse those out into individualized learning goals and maybe differentiate that way. But I highlight first what part of the learning goal they need to improve upon, and then I highlight where that evidence is in the quiz. So the way I think of standards-based grading is, one, identify what you want your kids to be able to know and do. Write it in a way that makes sense for them, so it's usable for them, but also usable for grading purposes. And then, or I should say feedback purposes. And then design opportunities for students to prove that they get it. Change that from, you know, we call them assessments and quizzes and tests and summative and formative. I am much broader in my thinking of it. I think of it as simply that, opportunities to demonstrate understanding. And when I think of it that way, it frees me up. It frees me up to create an online, like a video, post it online and say, hey, can you guys draw how to do this or why this works? You know, like I got a few of those that I had so much fun with this year. And honestly, the grading system is what freed me up to be able to do that.
Okay.
Because now I'm not like, okay, can you guys draw why this fork is sinking and now floating when I add this other thing in? All right. So if you can draw five particles, you know, it's going to be worth 2 points. And then if you do this, it's worth 5 points, and this is worth 7 points. And it's like, no, you got it. Thank you. Or you're not quite there yet, and here's why.
Hmm. So let's do some rapid fire, 30 seconds or less on your answers, and then we'll hit you with the doozy.
Good luck with me.
So, Bruick, what do you do for fun?
I read. I like playing guitar. I'm into crosswords at the moment. This sounds so exciting. I love hiking and backpacking. My brother lives in Denver, so I'll be out there this summer for a while. Usually I go skiing. I love downhill skiing too.
Cool. I love all those answers except crosswords, which I'm terrible at, so it's just a completely selfish reason for me.
See, the perfect opportunity for growth. There you go.
Yep, growth mindset. Carol Dweck, that's right. Crosswords 2016, here I come. What's one book every principal should read right now and why?
For that, I would say that the Vatterott book. It's called Rethinking Grading by Kathy Vatterott. And it was an ASCD book that was actually, I think, a free gift for members. I'm not currently one. So if you have an administrator who's an ASCD member, it's purple and beige, go find it because you might have it.
Yeah. I'm an ASCD member and I'm going to have to go find that. So thank you. We'll have it in the show notes for all our listeners.
Thank you.
One person you'd love to meet, either present or past.
Oh man, my coworkers are going to laugh at me for this. But Alice Keeler. Alice Keeler sends, I swear, like 30 to 50 tweets a day, and it's all like Google hotkeys and shortcuts and, you know, like how to write scripts, what I'm just getting into. Yeah. I would sit down with her and basically show her what I want my grade book to do and say, make it happen, please.
Yeah. That sounds incredible. Bruick, a tech resource that you leverage to be super effective at work?
Google, Twitter, Canvas, Notability.
Awesome.
By the way, Notability, do you know what that is?
Don't. Please explain.
Okay. Notability is an application. I don't know about its Android status. That's my fault. But because we're Apple, I know that it works on the iPad. It started off as an annotation tool, and all of our students have it. So it's, you know, it started off as the way that kids downloaded worksheets, filled them out, and then turned them back in.
Okay.
But it does a lot more than that. It allows them to put pictures in. They can record audio. They can organize it like a binder or a backpack. They can share live notes with each other. Now, right now they can't edit at the same time, and that's okay. We have other tools that do that. But the new feature that was released last night, which would have been, what, December 18th?
Yeah.
19th? The new version of Notability reads PDFs to you. And it is something we've been waiting on for a while, to have something that's integrated within our school that our kids already know how to use, for those young people who need that intervention,
right?
Where they need like something read to them. This thing, man, I tested it for like 45 minutes last night, and it read just about everything I needed to me, and it read it well. So Notability is awesome if you have tablet devices at school.
Yeah, we'll link that up too. So thanks for that resource. So this is the doozy of a question. You're building a school from a ground up. You're not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
So I'm thankful that you sent these questions ahead of time, because I had to think about it for a long time. I think I would have to, this is not to shirk your question, but I would have to defer to people who know more about what works right now. I feel like the idea of what I teach high school, but idea of what a school building should be has changed. It should have changed. The learning has changed. The types of learning, the ways in which kids learn. You know, I was looking at the programs that we offer at Noblesville, and I'm going to leave some out, but think about this. In addition to your core classes, which just in this, you need an art class, a chemistry, a physics class, your biology labs, your math spaces, your family and consumer sciences. You have kitchens. We have retail stores. We have business. We have computer labs. We have all this stuff. And then, oh, by the way, we also have a functional independence and transition skills population, or we call them FIATs. They're students who are literally going through different types of therapy, be it physical or speech or whatever, to function on a daily basis. We have athletics facilities, you know, that's indoor and outdoor. So like, why are we building boxes where all of the classrooms are very similar to one another? It's the whole idea behind the grade reports and the progress reports. It's like, why am I using the same progress report as a PE teacher? That's like, we don't teach the same things. In fact, you want to talk about standards-based, you know, learning environment. Go to a PE teacher. They already do it. You know, can you do this? Yes. Good. Can you not? No. Okay. Let's work on it. Mm-hmm. And so it needs to be different. We need to have places for the community to come in and get involved when they want to, and safe places for students and community members to interact. We need maker space. Sometimes we need lecture halls. There's not anything to say like, you can't deliver effective instruction in a lecture hall. Yeah, you can. In fact, there are great online tools that make it way more engaging and fun, and much more powerful. So I don't know. It's so complex. It's like it's one of the more complex questions I've ever been asked. We need less unitasker spaces and more multitasking spaces. Things that are modular, where kids can move from space to space and get exactly what they need from that space. So we're working on it. If you talk to Don, I mean, our library and media center is becoming what will be called our innovation center. And that innovation center is a huge open space with tons of movable furniture and connected devices and interactive touch screens and just good old traditional whiteboards and grease pens, you know, and so maybe there's a hub in our school. We will have a maker space off the side of it, and we have an innovations lab off the other side of it. So, you know, he's doing some cool stuff that I'm really excited for our kids. Like, I'm jealous of our students. And I think that's a good indicator of how good a school I teach at and how lucky I am. Because I wish I would have gone here.
That's what a gift. That's a beautiful description of a school that you would want to be a part of, you know, that we'd want to send our children to. So that's just awesome. And you and Don, you know, definitely keep up the good work.
Thanks.
So Ryan, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Parting words of advice. I think one thing that's helped me maybe most in my career is to simplify my thinking about complex problems, and that is by filtering it through a very specific lens. We have a three word, I guess you would call it, tagline in Noblesville schools, and the three words are engage, inspire, and empower. And if I ask myself if a decision I'm going to make is going to complement those three things, if it's going to help engage a kid, inspire a kid, or empower a student to do good, then that's a good choice. And if it's not, we need to reconsider it. The other one is, and this is the one that my school principal uses, and it's so simple, but it's impactful, is this what is best for student learning? If so, try it. If not, drop it. And go to the next thing. So that's my piece of advice. Keep it simple. Get a good filter and vet your decision-making through that filter, something you believe in.
Yeah, love that question. So if it's not what's best for student learning right now, drop it. If it is, go for it. Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Ryan. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Ryan in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up where you'll see the highlights of today's episode, link to all the resources, and the best way to connect. If you have an iPhone, tap on the cover art and show notes page will magically appear. Ryan, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Daniel, for all you do.
Hey, Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating or review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.